Vengeance, a true story.
Hello, and welcome to a brand new episode of Third Degree Burn. I am Tim Elliott, and we continue, or actually we conclude our coverage of the John Byrne Acts of Vengeance books, and with me is my lackey, Brian Hughes.
This was all my idea. I orchestrated, I brought everyone together in my mind. Wait a minute. Anyway, hey, welcome. I'm Brian Hughes, and this has been a lot of fun. Tim and I have just been toiling over these books, trying to make sure that we give it the proper coverage it deserves for this crossover event. And if you're not sure what I mean by crossover event, you're listening out of order. Now, we started this two episodes ago, covering the West Coast Avengers episodes 53 and 54. Today we'll be covering Avengers West Coast 55 as part of the Acts of Vengeance crossover. Now, of course, that was the Marvel crossover that took place back in the winter of 89 and 90. And we are covering now with several other podcasting groups, the Merry Marvel Marching Society, Fire and Water Network. You're going to see people like Married with Comics, Michael Bailey, Derek William Crabb with the Fan Holes podcast, and they're all doing various books throughout the Acts of Vengeance event. Now, Third Degree Burn couldn't be left out because, well, John Byrne was an integral part of this event since it surrounded the Avengers. And he's writing the regular Avengers book, and he's writing and drawing Avengers West Coast, which is what we're covering here. So also, if you've missed the other ones, the interns, David Thompson, John Hyatt, and Kurt Greenfield are covering the Wolverine books also. So you can look for those on our website and hopefully listen to those and find some entertainment value there as well. But all the shows are available across all the networks, and we'll try to point you to the proper links. This one right here is pretty much the very end of the Acts of Vengeance, or at least the end of the Avengers involvement. As far as that, and they're, of course, the main combatants. So without further ado, we'll go ahead and give you the particulars of Avengers West Coast number 55. It had a cover date of February 1990 and on sale date of December 5th, 1989. The cover price was $1, page count 32, that's 22 pages of art and 10 pages of ads. The story was, of course, written and penciled by John Byrne, inks by Paul Ryan, letters by Bill Oakley, colors by Bob Sharon. The editor was Howard Mackey, the editor-in-chief, Thomas DeFalco. Now, what else is coming out? In February of 1990, we had Alpha Flight number 81. This was just a cover, and we were trying to figure out if that was the Aurora or the North Star one, but I'm not sure. And then, of course, obviously, Avengers West Coast, number 55, Classic X-Men, number 44, Elegy and Her First and Last, and I believe that's just the follow-up to the Dark Phoenix saga reprint, Iron Man, number 253, Laughing All the Way to the Graveyard, and I believe this is one of the first issues of John Byrne writing Iron Man, isn't it? And John Romita Jr. doing the artwork?
Yes. Correct. He jumped over to Iron Man, or I think Howard Mackey asked him, because Howard Mackey was an editor on Iron Man as well, and he asked him to come over. And from what I've read, he said he had a great time working with John Romita on it. He thought they really clicked.
Well,
so.
You know, it was funny because he was talking about when he first left Marvel, and he was doing Fantastic Four, of course, and he had talked with the editor at the time about taking a step back from the artwork chores and John Romita Jr. doing the art on the Fantastic Four. Now, did John Romita Jr. ever do the Fantastic Four?
Not that I know of. I don't think he's ever drawn. He may have drawn those characters, but I don't think he's ever drawn
the
book.
I think he did an annual that had the Fantastic Four, an X-Men annual that had the Fantastic Four in it, with Archon, the Empyrean, and others.
But he's never drawn the book
right,
proper.
Right, right. And I think that he probably would have done pretty good, especially if he had John Byrne writing the stories and they were working together, like they did here with Iron Man. Of course, by the time they got to Iron Man here, John Romita Jr.'s art has morphed into something different from what most people were used to, and a lot of people were not happy with it. But we haven't covered that yet. I'm starting to read those just now, and they're definitely, you know, a departure, even from what he did in Starbrand, you know, to what we're seeing here.
it's a little more refined than I think Starbrand kind of was kind of an offshoot of his Spider-Man and X-Men work, which you kind of saw a little bit there. Because, you know, he did Iron Man.
He did Iron Man, but when
his early
when he
career.
Did when he was doing Iron Man before, he was doing it. Of course, Bob Layton was doing the inks, and so Bob Layton kept a consistency to the art style there. So it was very Marvel House style, much like John Romita Jr.'s Spider-Man was very much Marvel House style. Whether he had Mike Esposito, Klaus Janson, or other inkers coming in and do it, there was a consistency there. And this is such a departure from that. I didn't find the Iron Man armor that he drew looked like armor. It looked more organic.
I think Romita Jr. when the style that he's got now, and from listening to some of the David, I think, talking in our other cast, that what is he still doing Superman, or did he just leave Superman?
He's been doing Batman.
Batman, and he went over to DC because he was a Marvel guy. His whole career, they went over to DC and was doing Superman, and people didn't like it. I think his current style and what he kind of was doing with Iron Man, it doesn't lend itself to certain characters. Yeah. And I think his armor in Iron Man looked too kind of bulky and chunky. Yeah.
I can say that, but the Mandarin stuff looked really, really cool. And the giant dragon.
Like when he was doing Punisher War Journal, when he was doing Punisher. That dark, because I think Janson was inking him then. That looks good. I like that. Yeah.
And so we've digressed already on just the what's being published that much.
Yeah.
Also, he did something in Marvel Age number 84. I have to look that up to figure out what that is. It's probably the cover, though. Maybe he probably did another homage to Fantastic Four number 1, because we saw several of those in Marvel Age. And Avengers 314, Along Came the Spider, he wrote that. And then Wolverine number 21, Battleground, where he did the pencils on that. I believe Klaus Janson did the finishes there.
They're doing inks,
Yeah. Now, the story, of course, that we're talking about here, again, cover by John Byrne, pencils and inks on that all by himself. Synopsis. A house floats in low Earth orbit over California, much like bricks don't. Inside, Magneto, the master of magnetism, stands by the catatonic Scarlet Witch. Not even his ripping the house from the Earth and sending it into orbit has brought her out of her near-comatose state. Meanwhile, at Avengers headquarters, Thor meets with the other Avengers and proclaims that Loki, his brother, is responsible for all the recent attacks on the Avengers and other heroes. All involved then bring to light how each major villain think that they're behind the attacks, but Thor is determined that Loki is the one pulling the strings. Hawkeye and Mockingbird would like to speak with the wingless wizard, who is prisoner of the Avengers, since he was abandoned by the Mandarin in Avengers 313. However, before they can get down to see him, the wizard has made a hasty exit, courtesy of a teleportation device hidden under a fake thumbnail. The wizard arrives at the villain's lair in time to see them studying the remains of the Doombot that they have been working with up until it was destroyed, again in Avengers 313. The wizard scolds the Mandarin for abandoning him and explains how he used the teleportation device to escape, which infuriates the disguised Loki, who finally reveals himself to his lackeys. Once he reveals himself to be the god of evil, the villains begin to exit like rats on a sinking ship, first with the Kingpin. We then skip the Immortus plotline and join the Flying Wonder Man as he travels to the house where he knew Wanda would be at, only to see the empty lot as Magneto ripped the house away, again back in Avengers 313. Wonder Man is greeted by Agatha Harkness and the U.S. Agent as they recount what happened and where the house went. Simon and the U.S. Agent acquire a space-worthy Quinjet, I don't know where from because they keep getting destroyed, and head up to the house in low Earth orbit, which is the only way they can explain how they're still able to breathe up there, Magneto and Wanda. They find it, and Wonder Man exits the Quinjet to fly over to the house using his belt jets. Just as he gets to the house, it explodes. Meanwhile, in the villain's lair, Loki has frozen the remaining villains, the Wizard, the Mandarin, the Red Skull, and is going on and on about how their egos cost him his victory. He monologues so much that Thor enters at the perfect moment with the rest of the Avengers in tow. There, gathered the Avengers, including Hank Pym, Hawkeye, Mockingbird, Captain America, the Wasp, Thor, Iron Man, the Vision, and the Falcon? Well, they go on attack.
Yeah.
Loki is prepared, though, and appears to transport them all to the Isle of Silence, a land where he rules supreme. While all manner of beast and plant attack the Avengers, Cap orders Thor to take on Loki directly. But Loki runs and puts up a giant ice wall. All of a sudden, the villains are free from their paralysis. They all make a hasty retreat through the dimensional interface doors they had been traveling through. As the rest of the Avengers battle beast and plant, Thor destroys Loki's ice wall with a smash from Mjolnir. Varlet, stand and defend thyself! Loki conjures up two large hands of stone to crush Thor, but he simply smites the ground with Mjolnir, yelling, I say thee nay! The ground opens under Loki, and he falls deep into the crevice. Thor uses his incredible strength to close up the earth over Loki. Once done, all the creatures battling the Avengers vanish. Cap asks if Thor killed Loki, but Thor simply says, nay. And then he informs the Avengers that the field of battle that they stand upon represents Loki's original prison, his old abode, and that Loki's ire was drawn and that he caused the formation of the Avengers, something he wished to undo by forming this band of Earth's mightiest villains. Instead, as Thor says, he has succeeded only in strengthening our resolve. Let the evil minds of the world beware, ever and always shall the Avengers prevail. Epilogue. As the Avengers all split up and head towards their various homes, we see Hank Pym and the Wasp flying in one of the remaining Quinjets back at the West Coast compound. Once they land, Hank goes to check on Tigra, who he shrunk down several issues ago while she was having a feral incident. Jan goes to change costumes. Again! After changing, she goes to check on the Scarlet Witch, only to find a weak and hysterical U.S. agent. He claims Wonder Man is dead, blown to bits and out in outer space. When Jan asks who did it, Wanda replies that she did it. The Scarlet Witch stands over Jan and the U.S. agent. She has also changed to a new costume of red and black. Next issue, darker than Scarlet. The end.
Very nicely done.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. And this issue is, considering a lot of it is kind of the epilogue, that this wraps up quick. It's kind of okay. It's because there's about, well, two pages in here that are the Immortus storyline, which again doesn't have anything to do with the main story, but it's up and over, you know.
Yeah, well, you know, it's funny, and when we get there, I'll point out the irony of the moment. Going though to the cover, though, the cover is just like, this is what you should see from an Avengers cover. A storm going on and the Avengers all gripped into battle. Monsters there on there. And then, of course, there's Loki and Thor, you know, having their final battle there in the back of all that. And it's just a really awesome image. Though it does look like that green thing's going to eat Captain America's head.
That's Moss Man. That's what it looks like.
Not sure what that is, but...
You think that... Oh, it says let there be an ending. So I think it have a thing, but it says let there be an ending. And it's an ending from one story and really the beginning of another that Byrne is going to carry on in his remaining West Coast
issues. But he's been planting the seeds all along. And then...
Right, he's been working on this, And then it kind of gets... You know, when he kind of abruptly left the book, I think they had a couple fill-in issues, and then they kind of... did a two-issue kind of wrap up, and I haven't read what he had planned, but it's not. I think he had a longer story going on.
Yeah, he definitely had a longer end game there. He was planning on being with the Avengers for a while.
Yeah,
but you know, the cooler heads did not prevail there, unfortunately.
Well, you know, it's hard to, you know, if somebody leaves a book and they don't say tell you, you know, they don't give you your notes, you're gonna have to kind of end it in the way you want to. You drop it, or you try to wrap it up and just kind of sweep it under the rug and then go on with the next story.
Yeah.
I'd stop reading it after, I think, after his last issue. I didn't buy it anymore, so I didn't read West Coast after that.
Yeah, same here. I didn't. I was, and I'd scaled back a little bit on my reading at this point, so I wasn't reading a lot of books. And, I had to, you know, there had to be a good reason for me reading a book at this point. I was getting a little disillusioned with some things, and you know, you're at that age. I mean, I was, well, let's see, 89, so I was 23, 24 that year, and you know, I was starting to feel my oats in other areas, so I wasn't reading as much. But my friends still hounded me. They still wanted to game. They still wanted all this stuff. So I stayed involved in something, and I really enjoyed my comic book collection and I kept buying stuff, but I was a bit more selective.
You were saving all that money for all that sweet Image books
no,
coming
No, I was up. Just trying to make my bills. I was yeah. living on jujubes and peanuts. Golly,
and even a dollar... Yeah, even a dollar a book, it was, you know, if you bought 20 books, that's a lot of money a week for
well, comics. Let's see, in 88 and 89, I spent a year working at this Dillard's at Ridgemar Mall, which was on the west side of town, in between two comic book shops, which, you know, and this is at the time when Bob Picaro had offered to let me take over his shops. The sad thing was is that the Dillard's that I worked at had a cookie and candy counter. And as part of housewares and bridal, I had to man that at times. And we had so much leftover cookies each night that, you know, that was... I think I put on more weight there than any other age in my life.
There's your, there's your dinner right there.
That was
there.
My freshman 15, but it was more like a freshman 30. Oh, boy, that was not the best time for me. I would eventually take off the weight, but, man, that was... Now, looking though, at the first page here, I always love establishing shots like this. I know that when I read the JLA Earth 2 that Morrison and Quitely had done, mm-hmm. one of their establishing shots was the moon base of the JLA. And I always love those establishing shots because you can feel the silence of space, you know? And mm-hmm. this is one of those where you get that, too. Of course, you can see the little shards of wood that are falling off the house.
The foundation.
Yeah, the house there and you know, going back. And it's just a wonderful shot. Good black with stars on most of the right side. And, of course, the Earth down there. And, you know, as I look at the Earth here, I'm always trying to figure out what coast is he trying to represent here. This looks like inside of India, though. So we're looking at the Indian Ocean, I think. I could be wrong.
Yeah.
Because it says he's, he says they're high above the Golden Coastline of Southern California. So you'd be looking for Baja as the obvious toehold. But that's not what we're seeing there. So.
Yeah, because I don't know what that little peninsula that's sticking out. I don't know what that's supposed to be.
Because that's not Baja. No.
No. That's not the coast of California. Yeah.
But that's happened a couple times with him.
Yeah. So as Wanda, because I didn't read the Avengers 313 that this precedes this, where he rips the house up. Has she gotten back into her kind of comatose like
state?
She's
been in and out, various states. You know, like where Hank, you know, we saw two issues ago where Hank got her out by saying that the Vision needed her help, and they did other things like that in the other books. It kind of wore a little thin across multiple books because it just seemed like a zigzag on her. And so Magneto's sitting here, and of course that's a wonderful image of him sitting there holding his cape. And now I want to go back and look at the previous images because I don't remember that little U there on his chest plate in the previous issues. I could be wrong.
I don't know. The M's still there.
Yeah, the M's still there. See, I hate when this happens because now all of a sudden I'm like on a mission. Let me take a look real quick. No, it's okay. In the first issue, in 53, it is not on his armor there. So,
and that's interesting. It burned with
He's added that at some point, and the gloves are different too.
Those look like his classic gloves with the kind of stripes.
Yeah, where in the previous one there were the metal bolted gloves.
And Magneto can change. You know, he can change his mind.
A different belt on, but this is again, this is burned over three issues, and he's definitely made a change here for one reason or another. That's really interesting.
Maybe that's his. He has to make the changes because he's in space.
Maybe
I don't know.
Maybe that's. Yeah. But that's interesting. That's cool. I love these images of Magneto's face close up because they so remind me of the Kirby Magneto that he drew way back in the very early issues of X-Men, around time when he was trying to get the Sub-Mariner to join him, and he was able to project himself mentally.
Yeah.
Along, I guess, the astral plane. But here he's actually doing, he's actually going to physically reach out to Wanda to see if he can get her to come out of her own catatonia. Of course, the next page is a nice headshot of Thor in the very pointy helmet saying that Loki is responsible for everything that's going on. And the Avengers spend a couple pages all posing and discussing this, but we find that they weren't careful enough to search the wizard properly. Tony Stark or Hank Pym had been the ones to put him in their little thing. You know, they would have checked him over for something like this. They would have found that thumbnail thing.
Well, you think the cell would have some type of general technology dampening field so that nothing... And I think this is a homage to Hulk 1, because Igor has his little... Mm-hmm. When he's in jail, he's got his little thumb transmitter that he's transmitting, I think, to the gargoyle.
Good pull.
Yeah. And then, of course... And then, I guess in a previous issue, is that when the Doombot...
Yeah, the regular Avengers proper...
The Doombot exploded. Yeah. So, and they say they don't know if... We assume it was always a Doombot, but they say Doom could have been there as actual Doom sometimes, and sometimes it was a Doombot. They don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Then, as soon as the wizard, which he looks funny without his hat, as soon as he tells Loki what he's done, Loki just goes into a fit.
Yes.
Into such ranting and raving.
Ignorant mortal, say thou hast not done this thing. Yeah, and then, of course, when he turns into Loki, he goes into full maniacal right there.
Mm-hmm.
Gosh, you know, that second image on the next page, where he's still in this suit, he looks familiar. He looks like somebody, and I cannot, for the life of me, place the face. It ain't Tom Hiddleston, though.
No. He looks a little, well, his hair's kind of, you know, he's like, kind of like he's caught in a kind of like a maelstrom or something, his hair's kind of getting tussled, and he's got kind of the arched eye. He looks a little Vulcan-like.
Almost Namor. Almost like Namor.
Mm-hmm. Maybe that's what I was thinking. Yeah.
But then the Kingpin's like, yep, time to get out of here.
He's a smart one. He goes, I am exiting. He's doing it's called an Irish exit. So when you exit without telling anybody. And then the Red Skull's like, oh, it's Loki, you know, because then that's even kind of out of his league.
Yep.
Then we got... Two more, you know, again with the Immortus, but two more beautiful pages.
Abraham Lincoln, John Wilkes Booth.
Yeah, and him thwarting John Wilkes Booth trying to assassinate him. And it's just the same as when he was doing in the 53, when he was Queen Elizabeth. The likenesses are stunning, and it's very detailed, and it's just a different art style. It's beautiful. We ever know what's going on, and then He realizes something, because he's been focusing on Wanda, and he realizes Wanda's gone. That's when we come back to Wonder Man, and he realizes the house is gone. And Agatha tells him that, did he tell him it was Magneto, or just tells him the house was ripped up? It was just torn from its base, and then U.S. Agent tells him, I was coming in, and I saw the house, you know, kind of given the same direction. And Wonder Man wants to kind of run off in a huff, and U.S. agents, you know, says, no, we're gonna do this by the numbers, so let's be calm about this. So they get their space Quinjet and start go look for the house.
Would you think of these two as being, you know, spacefaring pilots? We must have great autopilot on it. But U.S. agent looks like Captain America in that bottom right panel. They got him colored wrong.
Yeah. It's got a lot of light blues on his black.
His custom coloring in this one is very light blue rather than gray.
I think that may be a mistake by the colorist, because his costume is virtually from the back. It's virtually the same as Captain
but
America.
Then the next page, when you see Simon putting on the space helmet to go out, it's all dark gray. Now.
Yeah, yeah, that's the upside down page.
If you're reading the CBR, you've got an upside down page.
Yeah,
and then the house blows up.
The ink's a little dark in that, I guess that's okay because it's space, but the house is a little dark when he's first flying towards it, and it's kind of a dark blue, and then it detonates. And then we cut back to And this scene reminded me of, have you seen the movie, it's a Clint Eastwood movie and he steals the plane.
Firefox.
What is that film? Firefox. And there's a Russian general that when they're trying to get Firefox back and they keep making these decisions that are wrong. And he's kind of gritting his teeth because he knows what they should be doing. And there's finally a point where he just explodes and says, he calls them all idiots and says, you know, you're losing this plane because, you know, you're acting as idiots. This is what you should be doing. And that's what this reminded me of, because he's just dressing them down. He's got them paralyzed. He's calling them fools, stupid, mortal imbeciles.
Well, every time I see people paralyze this, I always think back to the Dark Phoenix saga, or what we're going to see in one of the next couple issues here of Avengers West Coast, where, mm-hmm. you know, Jean, or in that case, Wanda, have the team all paralyzed in a row like that.
Well, that's that. There's a scene in the Hellfire Club. It's like that, right?
Not the Hellfire Club. Outside the Gray's house. Before
okay.
Professor X comes in and does his mental...
And does battle with her. Yeah.
But this one here, of course, is, you know, him monologuing how, you know, he was the one that was going to do everything right, and they're the ones that screwed it all up for him. And he talks just enough for Thor to come in and to bring all the Avengers behind him, including the Falcon. Where did the Falcon come from?
We hadn't seen him.
Yeah, just, I was like, wait a minute, what is the Falcon doing here? And I'm sure, you know, he was in one of the other books or something. You know, he didn't have a miniseries of his own at the time that I recall.
Well, I don't remember him being in the Avenger book much or at all.
He was part of the Avengers in the 180s, and he left because he felt like he was the token.
Yeah.
And then I don't recall him being a part of the team proper again for any good measure of time that I read. But then again, you know, I haven't read all of it. And I want to go back and I want to read the Roger Stern, John Buscema run. Because...
Yeah, see, he wasn't in that. I read that run. I liked it. He wasn't in part of that. There's all these reserve members that can be called in, I guess, whenever they need him.
Yeah, but, I mean, the thing here is that everybody else is someone that has been involved in this. In one way or another. Mm-hmm. Now, Thor, of course, if you haven't read those issues yet, those were really good ones. Ron Frenz and Brett Breeding doing the art, and I think Tom DeFalco is writing it. But Thor is fighting the Juggernaut and has the help of the New Warriors. And so mm-hmm. you've got some really, really good stuff there. But, I mean, all these others have been definitely involved in the acts of vengeance. I have to assume that he came from something in, you know, involved in that somewhere, but I just don't know where.
Yeah. Well, Loki, you know, he's having his fit that he thinks the wizard has screwed things up because he's led Thor here, but up until now, nothing has worked anyway. Every villain that they've sent, that they've had fight a different hero, they've always lost. Or found out that they were duped and they've left on their own. So it's not like his plan is working. So I don't know why. I mean, yeah, he's got to be upset that he's going to lead the heroes to their little hideout. But unless he had something, you know, I don't like, you know, he wasn't doing a great job of accomplishing his goals. So,
I mean, I love this image. Of course, there's two images on this page. The first one is the Avengers standing there, all spoiling for a fight. And then the next panel, of course, Falcon screams out, "Let's go kick some butt."
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, he basically, and he says he's paraphrasing, so you know what he really meant. And that's, of course, when Loki does whatever spell to bring him to the Isle of Silence. And, I will profess my ignorance here because I have not read up on Thor to know anything about all this. And that, of course, this is an imitation, and he's got complete control of it. But
I don't know if he's trans. I mean, I didn't get the impression he transported into the Isle of Silence. I thought they were already there. He's just moving the doors that when they were walking through their dimensional doors, they were going
because
to the
this
room
is his
was
prison,
on.
Isn't it? This is the prison that Odin put him at.
He said it was.
Never actually traveled to Earth. Yeah.
And I would think that if it's the Isle of Silence, maybe. That has something to do with Loki can't cast his spells because he can't. I'm not familiar with that either, so I'd have to look up and see what that is. But
there he's got complete control. He's got all these plants attacking. Wind is attacking the Falcon and the Wasp. Fire after Iron Man, which, you know, unless it's magical fire, I wonder if it could really hurt him at first. We've seen him go into infernos before in the Avengers. And then on the next page is almost a reproduction of the image of Captain America fighting that moss thing that you were talking about, except this is gray.
It's like
a troll with a kingpin's head on it, making a baby face.
Like he's giving him a death hug.
And then, of course, Thor's chasing Loki, who puts up the ice wall.
That seems kind of... That's awfully weak. I mean, a wall of ice to stop Thor? Come on, one, he could jump over it. It's not a very tall wall.
Yeah, but, you know, I mean, again, this is Loki. Everything's got misdirection and deception. Yeah. So, you know, he's desperate at this point because his grasp on the villains finishes, you know, goes away, and the villains are actually able to leave using those dimensional portals.
Well, and then, the Mandarin is the only... The skull is kind of like... You know, we're free. You know, we can attack the heroes. And the man is like, "Don't be an idiot." You know, we've been played. Let's get out of here. And then the wizard discovers that the walls are down, but the door still works. So they just open the door and kind of jump through, I guess, back to their own headquarters. And that's the last we see of them.
And at this point, you know, Cap and Wasp are fighting some things, and then Cap frees Mockingbird from the plants by throwing a shield at it, and then Thor yelling out, "Varlet, stand and defend thyself," as he smashes the ice with his hammer. Now, the thing I like about this is that they don't put any sound effects in this. Because you're going to hear what you're going to hear in your head. There's no reason to try to put words to it, I think.
Yeah. Well, and that panel on the next page is kind of the same as the cover. I mean, they're facing off with each other, and they're kind of ranting at each other, and Loki tries to crushing with his rock hands, and of course Thor just says nope, and
he doesn't say nope, he says I say thee nay. Must say that every time you read it. And with a thrack, he splits the earth open underneath Loki.
Yep. And then he just closes it up. I thought that's
that's a very comic book kind of thing to do.
Exactly. That's something you would see Superman do in the Fleischer cartoons from the 30s. And then it's info dump time.
And thankfully, and this is the irony that I was going to point out earlier, is that the info dump is handled by Thor. And so instead of getting a full page of info dump, we only get like, you know, two bubbles worth or two panels worth of a few bubbles. Basically, Thor saying it's the formation of the Avengers that caused all this in the first place because Loki was responsible for that. And we just showed him that, you know, we're always going to be here, and this just makes our revolve even that stronger.
Yeah, they kind of say that, you know, we were kind of meant to be together. So almost that, you know, some kind of a team would be formed even if Loki hadn't brought them together in that first issue. But so that's what I thought was a little weak about this whole story, is that it's just that. He says it's been festering in Loki that he is responsible for creating the Avengers. So now he thought, well, I'll get payback. I will destroy the Avengers by coming up with this complicated scheme of his. And I thought, well, wouldn't it be more interesting if he was doing something more of the lines of like a Terminator sequence where he goes back in time and somehow prevents all the members from becoming or something like that, so that he's not that getting revenge on him, but he ceases them from ever becoming the Avengers. I think he could do some cool
you
stories
hear
with that.
Funny is that as I was putting a synopsis to this one together, I honestly thought this was the end of the story, and I wrote the end. And
well, in a way, it is the
because this right here is the de facto end of the Acts of Vengeance. We could stop right here, but still, there is the epilogue, which of course I already brought you up on, where you saw the Quinjet, and you know the Avengers basically going off their own separate way with Hank Pym and Janet heading back to the Avengers compound, and he's going to go and check on Tigra, and then she's going to go and change her costume again. And she does.
Well, at least she says this time, I'm going to change into a fresh costume.
And she changed into a very powder blue and white costume that it looks more 70s than, you know, that era. But okay.
It does. It looks a little disco.
She doesn't notice the missing house. And yet she wants to go check on Wanda. Because wouldn't Wanda's house be the one that's missing?
I would think that's her bungalow. So,
But yet... So she's going to this house here, And somehow U.S. Agent is in here. Did the Quinjet get blown up? What happened there?
No. Oh, I know. Oh, I read ahead. Have you read the other two issues?
Not recently.
She, it's explained that when, this is spoilers, if anybody cares about that, when Wonder Man shows up and they say, wait a minute, they said you were dead. And Wanda says, you were dead, but my powers can change reality. So I just
brought him back.
I whipped up a reality where he didn't die and the house was back. So she brings the house back. And
so this
Wonder
is
Man
that
back.
House.
Right.
Okay.
So this
okay.
is her house.
And but then U.S. Agent, of course, it looks very blue rather than gray.
Yeah, it looks like Cap. If you didn't know the difference, you'd think that was Cap. I guess they brought him back from space. I guess they destroyed they blew up the house, and then I don't know how to explain how.
But that
there.
Last page shot of her in that new outfit, that is really really cool. It's a cool outfit, and
it's not vastly different than what.
But
she
this
had.
Is what ended John Byrne's run on West Coast Avengers. Tom DeFalco said you weren't supposed to change his costume, and he goes, you agreed to it. Come on.
Well, as I said earlier, I had read that it wasn't – I didn't hear anything about the costume. It was the Immortus story right. he was doing. They told him, you can't do that. And because he had put all this work into it and he couldn't finish it, he said, okay, I'm leaving, kind of in protest. This costume may have had something to do with it too. But and I don't know if that ever – and I don't know what his – I have not read what his – what he was going to – maybe you know. Do you know what he was going to do with – finishing out this Wanda
no.
storyline?
I don't know.
Yeah. I did read that some of this, that when Bendis wrote Avengers Disassembled, he kind of pulled from this as, you know, of her kind of going bad.
Well,
as his inspiration for doing that story.
Here's the funny thing, is that, I mean, I did read the following issues that Byrne did on West Coast Avengers. Up to the point where he left. And yet, my mind kind of threw some of that out in the trash because I stopped reading Avengers altogether, and I don't remember picking any of the Avengers books up until after late 90s or early 2000s reboot with Kurt Busiek and George Perez. So in my mind, for some reason, Wonder Man was dead and then got brought back in that restart. Now, of course, that's after Heroes Reborn and all that, and Rebirth and all that. So, you know, a lot mm-hmm. of things could have changed in all the continuity changes that they made. But my mind had just, you know, switched things around. So I thought that, yeah, Wonder Man got killed here and was brought back way then. But no, a lot of different things happened in there. It's just I was out of continuity for a long time.
Yeah, and your memory cheats you, so sometimes you can't, you don't remember. And I don't know how, and I haven't read the, you know, like I said, after Burns got two more issues, and then kind of it's kind of coming to a climax, he leaves. They've got like two fill-in issues, which apparently aren't very good. Then they do two more issues that kind of wrap this up, but I haven't read them. So I don't know how, and I can't even remember who came on the book after...
After Byrne?
We should have stuff like... Yeah, after Byrne.
I can pull that up real quick if I go to the right spot.
I'm looking it up real quick.
Okay, yeah, let's see. So 57 was the last issue he did, Family Reunion. And then 58 was called...
It's Fabian...
Yeah, Fabian DeChesa.
And Sarah and
Tom Morgan on pencils and Randy Emberlin on inks. And they just do not look good. It looks like to be Walt Simonson and Todd McFarlane.
It looks a little Simonson, especially coming after Byrne. It's you've got to really have a good style for coming after Byrne because these look like the next one is Danny Fingeroff and Gary Hartley and Brad Venkata. I think those are both fill-in. Those are probably stories
like
they had in a
cover,
drawer somewhere.
That Wonder Man Hawkeye cover.
It's not bad. It's got a style to it.
Well,
yeah, with Hydra Man.
And I think he was trying to channel Byrne.
Well, if you look at issue 60, which is Roy Thomas and Dan Thomas, is that his brother or son?
His wife.
Maybe. Oh, okay. Then Paul Ryan is
becoming penciler. This is actually, though, the pickup of the continuity, though.
Right. And that cover looks a little Byrne-like, where he's got... It's a rematch with Magneto. And again, I don't know... I haven't read the book. It's got a synopsis. There's no synopsis here, but... It's funny when you go in the wiki, if it's not a Byrne issue, a lot of times they don't have a synopsis. but apparently it was wrapped up very quickly, and it wasn't what I guess Byrne wanted to do. So, I don't know. I guess he didn't share his notes, but so whatever we want to do. And as you mentioned, there's a lot of Byrne's history is a lot of unfinished stuff. Things that he wanted to finish. The Hulk is one thing. This is another. Alpha Flight. I don't know if that's unfinished. That was kind of a book he didn't want to do.
He had said everything he wanted to say.
Right, and he kind of was, he said he was kind of forced to do that one.
Now, after that first issue you saw there with Roy and Dan Thomas on the writing, Paul Ryan comes in as penciler after an issue or two later back in 61. And so the artwork is, obviously it's not going to be as crisp as Byrne, but, Paul Ryan has always been one of those good workman kind of guys who's consistent. And his art's always been decent.
There's nothing wrong with being kind of workman-like artist. I mean, that's
issue 62 wraps up that storyline, and
the
final battle of the Immortus and the final fate of the Scarlet Witch. And let me see if I see this right. Well, they don't say yet if she's going to change costumes, but they do end that storyline. Let me see if they even show her in the next one.
Roy Thomas stayed on it for quite a bit after that.
Yeah, well, he likes writing. And now, Roy Thomas and John Byrne, I don't think they had arguments, but I don't think they really saw eye to eye on Marvel history, because they always rewrote each other.
Hmm.
They kind of use that everything is wrong style with each other's stories. That's why Byrne brought back the torch. And that was Roy Thomas' thing that put him there in the first place.
Yeah.
Oof. Anyway, that was fun. I mean, I've always enjoyed these issues. I've always enjoyed the entire Byrne run on West Coast Avengers. There wasn't a stinker in any of the books.
It's most of, and that's a shame, except with his big runs like FF, X-Men, Superman to a certain extent, he always wants you, he leaves you wanting more. He never stays on a book. The Hulk is probably the best example. Never stays on a book as long as you want him to really get into and do the stuff. I mean, FF is probably the only thing where he really got to tell all the stories he wanted to tell. Maybe X-Men. And even that, he left with some disagreements.
Yeah, he left because he didn't have the control, and he would sit there and put things on the page that they'd discussed in plotting, and then Claremont would write it differently than what they'd agreed. And ultimately, he found that he didn't have last cut. Claremont had last cut. So, he, of course, was being offered stuff. He was being offered a number of things, but Fantastic Four came up, and he couldn't say no. And then,
he's such a fan of Kirby. I can imagine him not taking the book.
It's he wanted to be a company man. He even said so back in the days when he was younger and full of vinegar. But the company really didn't make him feel loved, not in the way that he wanted to be. But let's talk about this storyline now for just a moment. And there's something that It just kind of started to crystallize as we were going over all this. The idea, of course, is acts of vengeance. Now, vengeance, says, like Avengers, says that you're trying to get back for something,
Mm-hmm.
And that's, what we saw with the UFOs. They thought they'd killed Vector, so they attacked. What we saw with Mole Man, he thought that they'd attack, so he attacks. And the last chapter, of course, is, Loki himself attacking in revenge to Thor and the Avengers themselves for, being there in the first place. But when you look at the rest of the villains, what is it that they're actually going for? I mean, when you look at the master villains, Kingpin, Doctor Doom, and Mandarin, and I mean, they're just looking for control, right? But where does it leave other villains like Juggernaut. What's his motivation? What's his end game? You know, does he just want a lot of money and chicks and stuff?
I think, yeah, I think those kind of villains, there are villains that just want to, they're up to like Robin Banks, and they just, you know, it was, with Juggernaut, it was always him and, was it Black Tom?
Yeah.
His buddy. They just kind of wanted to hang out and just, you know, drink beer and enjoy themselves. And if they had to kind of occasionally rob a bank to do that, they would do it. They didn't want a 9-to-5 job. And then there are villains like, you know, Doom or Red Skull that want total
world
control,
domination.
You know.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
But
that's
like,
but Doom expects power.
Absorbing man.
He just
absorbing
wants power.
Man. What does he ultimately want? Because it's not a shirt. You know, I mean, he walks around in those prison pants with no shirt. And in this storyline, he, of course, was sent after, Iron Man? I'm trying to remember.
Yeah, well, that, the Wrecker went after Iron Man.
Wrecker went after Iron Man. Absorbing Man went after, Quasar.
Quasar. Quasar, okay.
Because he
right.
got his hand on his band and actually got Quasar's power and too much, and he blew up.
Well, the Absorbing Man, I think, hooked up with, didn't he hook up with Titania from Secret Wars? They kind of had an apartment together.
They weren't around at this point.
Kind of living.
Basically, he got ripped apart by the Hulk in the Peter David run and wound up in water. And in Quasar book, he reformed finally, and Loki came and said, hey, let me touch your wrecking ball here. Now you can use it like Thor uses his hammer to fly. And he set him against Quasar. And
yeah. Well, I think some of those, as they said in the last issue, that some of the other attacks seem like more distractions.
Yeah.
But that's a good point. It's not clear. Now, we're just reading three issues that are kind of in the middle of, they're kind of
right,
the core of the story. But without reading all of them, I don't know. What was Kingpin promised? I mean, you know, Loki as a lackey comes to Kingpin and says, hey, I'll help you get at these villains.
We'd have to go to the Daredevil book to find out what Loki did promise him.
Right. And the same with... I'm sure with the wizard, it's always power and control. I'm sure with the Kingpin, his has mostly been just like the control of New York. He's the Kingpin of crime. He just wants to control all crime and want money. I'm sure with Mandarin, it's probably, again, world domination. Red Skull, I don't know. I mean, I don't know what the Red Skull's plan has ever been. Has he ever been trying to bring back the Third Reich, or has he ever gone on just
to... Well, this is a rejuvenated Red Skull, too, because he has the body of Steve Rogers, basically.
Right.
So, he wants to bring in the new Third Reich and, take over mankind in the Aryan way.
And Magneto wanted, I guess, you know, again...
For mutant kind.
He said it was to help... Right, to help... strengthen his, you know, the mutants, you know, place on Earth. Then, of course, that seems to be turned that he was just going after the Red Skull. So that, I think, is what gets a little, I've read that as a criticism against this, that it seemed like it was a great idea, but then it wasn't coordinated with all the writers, I guess, and editors, and every kind of went off and did their own thing. So sometimes some books would contradict
right.
other
like,
books.
What were
what
the
happened.
Freedom Force doing going up against the Avengers? And what was their motivation? At that point, they'd already been disavowed by the government. And so they didn't have that government power, and yet here they are trying to take on the Avengers. What was their end game? They didn't have one. There was no thought to it.
What? And it wasn't, because we covered that book, it wasn't that somebody had fooled them into thinking that that the Avengers had attacked them and they were getting... You know, if that had been the through line through all of this, I think that would have worked. If Loki had basically... But that's the case. He wouldn't need the masterminds. He could have done this without Kingpin and Wizard and the rest, and just gone to all these villain groups and made them think that the Avengers had attacked them. And then, you know, maybe that's it. All the bad guys are attacking the Avengers. Instead of everybody switching up heroes or switching up villains, maybe it's kind of, kind of what Bane did when he was trying to break Batman before he broke his back. He released, like, all the crooks out of Arkham, so Batman was... just worn out trying to fight them all. And then if you had every bad guy in the Marvel Universe going after the Avengers, and then other heroes come in and help, that made even more sense. So I think, on the surface, this is, everybody's switching bad guys. That's fun. But then when you start thinking about what the story is, and like I said, everybody's motivation and in-game, some of that gets lost. So maybe I need to read all of it again to get a better view of it.
That's a lot of issues.
Yeah,
if you can get that Kindle book though, it's a decent buy on Amazon, and you can read it digitally, put it on your tablet, and just scroll through it. And there's gonna be some stuff you're gonna want to scroll through. I couldn't read the Iron Man, Camistro story. It was Herb Trimpe and Al Milgrom doing the art, and it's late Herb Trimpe.
That's a bear.
It's late Herb Trimpe. It didn't do it for me. And again, you know, there's some writers that are good and some writers that, you know, are not as good at conveying, you know, this kind of epicness. And that's what this should have been. Mm-hmm. It should have been epic all across. And they didn't quite do that.
I think this last issue should have been bigger. It gets resolved in like...
Yeah, double-sized... thing. Mm-hmm. But again, you know, they didn't showcase this like they did a summer event. Right. And so, you know, it's funny because it had better media surrounding it, because they had all that stuff that John Byrne did, that beautiful purple on purple image of all the villains, you know, in shadow, and then that one shot of all the heroes' stuff on the ground broken. Thor's hammer, Iron Man's helmet, all busted up. I mean, that was good stuff, and that just said, "Ooh, this is going to be great," and they just didn't put any length to it, so that they should have made this a double-sized issue. But it would have just been multiple pages of the Avengers fighting Loki's beasts, though, is what it would have wound up being, though, I think.
Yeah, or maybe they could have thrown in them fighting. If Loki had. He had frozen the villains, and then he released them and let them go up against the Avengers, and then they had to go through them and then get to Loki. Just something to prolong it a little bit, because, you know, they certainly led up to it by having those scenes in the books where Loki he was in shadow, would show up and like, hey, I got an idea. And then you end it so quickly. I don't know if Byrne wanted to make it longer, or they needed to, because he's trying to end one story and then start and then kind of continue, really amp up this Wanda story that seems like that's where his interest was. It was more there because he really seemed to have a thing for Wanda when he took over West Coast, because she was kind of the star or the main focus point of the run. He did so much with her to kind of
reestablish her. Done more with Wonder Man as a character all across these, you know, the story here, so that you Wonder Man was gaining in strength and respect amongst the readers.
Yeah.
So that you could accept a relationship with him and Wanda that may have come from this. But
it'd been interesting to see where he was going to take it.
To me, that's like trading a toaster for a microwave.
Yeah.
You catch the analogy, right? Okay.
Right.
But... But anyway, what do you guys think about this? I mean, you know, we finished up the Acts of Vengeance. Of course, there's been a lot of other podcasts that are part of this whole event that you can listen to, and we'll put links to them in the show notes. But what did you think of this issue in particular? Because while it is a regular-sized book, it is a big issue. I mean, there is a lot of really cool stuff that happens in here. Does it signify much? Maybe not, but it's still really interesting and epic in scope.
It's worth a read. It's worth a read. Whether it ended a little flat, I think it's worth reading for the art alone, at least in the Byrne stuff.
Yep. Where was Thor all this time? That's what everybody always asks. Where was Thor?
Yeah.
Comes in, waves a hammer, everything's good again. Well, kind of. Anyway, but, you know, write us and let us know what you think. You can leave us a message on our Third Degree Burn Facebook page, or you can email us at gottagetburned@gmail.com, or leave us a review on Apple Podcast. We'd love to hear from you. One way or the other, just let us know what you're thinking. And also, write in about how the interns did on their Wolverine books. I'd like to know about that as well.
What did you think about Acts of Vengeance? Did you like it more or the same or less than we did? Did you want to see it go a different direction? And how would you have handled it? Let's really open the floodgates open there.
And how was our coverage of it? I mean, did we do it justice? You know, did we skip some things? Were there themes we missed? You know, we're not infallible.
Well, we did skip the Immortus stuff, but I felt like that was justified.
That doesn't really tie into it. Yeah, that's not the Acts of Vengeance. That's got nothing to do with it. That's just
kind of just gorgeous, a storyline he was peppering in. Definitely was gorgeous on all those pages.
Yeah, it's worth watching just for that. That's fantastic stuff.
All right. Well, go ahead.
No, I'll just say I think we've covered it, and I think this would be the last show, unless Derek's going to have some kind of an epilogue show. I think this would be the last one covering.
I'd like to participate in that, I think
if there's anything else, we'll have to see. If not, this is the end of the Acts of Vengeance.
Well, we hope you enjoyed it, and hope you have a great week. For Third Degree Burn, I'm Brian Hughes.
And I'm Tim Elliott.
Thanks for listening. You can find us and many other great shows at tutufreaks.com. That's TWOTRUEFREAKS.com. Third Degree Burn is spelled with the number 3, RDDEGREEBYRNE, and is part of the Tutu Freaks network of shows. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Just look for Third Degree Burn, spelled with the number 3, and Burn spelled BYRNE. Compliments, complaints, and recipes can be sent to gottagetburned@gmail.com. That's GOTTAGETBYRNED@gmail.com. Drop us a line and tell us how we're doing. Till next time, this has been Third Degree Burn.
Some men aren't looking for anything logical, like money. They can't be bought, bullied, reasoned, or negotiated with. Some men just want to watch the world burn.